We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Bristol Post, read by Cathy Clugston.
Bristol Magistrates Court. Watch thief told she's likely to face time.
And our thanks to Lloyd Nail for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and David Mitchell. And opposite them on my left, Ellis James and Mark Steele. Jeremy, listen to this. Jeremy, why might I be glad to be grey?
Well, of course, it's the budget, and I'm incoherent because I've just been drinking beer solidly since the budget speech. I must have saved pennies. And with all my savings, I'm going to go straight down the bingo hall the minute this is finished, because I am reaching the age where holding a giant marker pen seems like an exciting way of preserving my hand-to-eye coordination. And who would know that our Chancellor is a devout Muslim who prostrates himself before Mecca? But, of course, those changes are not directed at me, as we know from the embarrassing tweet of Grant Shapps, who pointed out that the beer and bingo stuff was aimed at hard-working people, and he's been met with huge derision for that. And this is, of course, Osborne's attempt to appeal to ordinary people. He's tried, you know, hanging around on construction sites wearing a hard hat and an expression that says, please just take my wallet and don't hurt me. But, of course, the bit that's meant to affect me is the pension bit, because in 2 years and a bit, I shall be 55, and then I can draw down my entire pension, which by now must be worth almost as much as I've paid into it over the last 30 years. And then I have the choice. I will have the freedom. I have the freedom to decide whether to just blow it all on one shop in Waitrose.
I think what the Chancellor's trying to encourage, surely, is that you should put it into bingo.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's what working people enjoy. It's what Grant Shapps was alluding to. He must, honestly, when he sent that thing out on Twitter, must have been imagining that the streets would be packed with people coming up to him going, oh, Mr. Shapps, thank you so much, you kindly soul, and no mistake. And if you can see your way to cutting taxes on other things us working people enjoy, like dogfighting, Mr. Shapps. Sea shanties, if you could cut excise duty on singing in ports.
You know, when the newspapers and on the television, they go, budget at a glance, it should just have a photo of George Osborne smirking, and that tells you all you need to know.
What did anybody think about Mr. Miliband, how he fared at the budget? Oh, it's just so
He did actually not speak about the budget, which was the most interesting thing you could do in those circumstances, wasn't it?
What I liked is the forecast for growth in 2014 is 2.7%, and I thought, oh, that'll make me 5'1". Rather pleasing. Was there anything particularly Welsh, Ellis? I'm trying to think in the budget about
that. Oh, I don't know, they've just forgotten about us again.
Really? Just nothing?
No, I don't think so. I'm probably going to find out that there was something massive that I missed because I was reading the sport instead of the budget.
What, the mountain tax? You missed that?
The Welsh rarebit tax.
I like the way that Wales has recently provided the country with something to worry about even more than the NHS, which is the Welsh NHS.
Oh.
Which, you know, apparently if you don't like the NHS, you really won't like the Welsh NHS.
Do you know, it's the only word I know in Welsh, because I've had many holidays with my children, is the word for hospital. It's isbiti.
Well, sort of, yeah.
Well.
Don't
OK,
know.
Try
don't
me argue. On your Danish. In his budget speech, George Osborne announced the biggest overhaul of pensions for a generation. He is scrapping the rules that force most Britons to use their pension savings to buy an annuity. Shares in Britain's main pension providers fell rapidly, including Ladbrokes, William Hill and the National Lottery. He also unveiled a new pensioner bond, or as he's better known, Sean Connery. The new pensioner bond drives a Volvo, has a pen that also removes earwax, and a special tracking device to locate his reading glasses. A new pound coin will be introduced, forcing a change in vending machines, or, as the Conservative chairman Grant Shapps calls them, restaurants for working people. 2 points to Jeremy. David, where does my garden city grow?
I think it grows in a quarry that's prone to flooding, known as Ebbsfleet, where the Chancellor thinks it would be a very good idea, now that flooding is finished, that was the Great Flood, and it's over. So he's going to build 15,000 new homes in... Well, not personally. He's going to order people... Actually, I don't blame him for not building them himself. He's not qualified.
I mean, he's hailed it as a great place to live. It is right next to the M25... because I drive past it all the time. It's the M25, the M20, M2 and A2.
It's the perfect place to leave.
But it's for housing hard-working people, isn't it? You know, those hard-working people who are always making things out of flint. Those people. You need to create gardens. They need gardens that they can go in, these hard-working people, and cities where they can be housed. Secure places surrounded by barbed wire and dogs, obviously.
But he described it as a proper garden city, which presumably means it's going to have a moat, I would have thought. It's extraordinary.
I've actually been to Ebbsfleet.
Have you, darling?
Yeah, there's a very fast train line there, and then you get out into a very modern station. It's all splendid. And then there's nothing.
But soon it will be a garden city.
Well, I mean, I can see why they put it there, because there's nothing there at the moment.
But they've actually had this plan since 2007. What's extraordinary is every single political party is sort of taking credit for it. It's the political equivalent of Andy Murray.
But they, like you say, they keep announcing this stuff, and this is what successive governments do. They just keep announcing the same things, and those things don't really happen, just to keep our spirits up. They might as well keep saying, "We're pleased to tell you that Germany has surrendered." Just every few years.
A new generation of garden cities could be built in Britain to solve the housing crisis, George Osborne has indicated while confirming the announcement of a new 15,000-home project at Ebbsfleet. Ebbsfleet has high-speed links to London and from 2020 to Birmingham and will provide nearly enough homes to replace the ones that will have to be destroyed for HS2. The Chancellor denied he was focusing on the South East too much, arguing that there were plans for a new garden city as far north as Watford. 2 points to David. Ellis, whose fee for helping has earned him a right kicking?
Oh,
this is what I've done there.
Yes.
Yes, I'm rather pleased with myself. It's a footballing joke.
This is to do with FIFA.
FIFA!
2022 World Cup.
Yes.
Because it's gone to Qatar. Mm. Apparently, it's a little bit corrupt.
No.
Yeah, way.
I find this astonishing.
And I don't know why you'd need to bribe anyone to hold a World Cup in a country where it's 50 degrees in the summer, you can't drink beer and homosexuality's illegal. I mean, why would you need...
We're trying to answer the age-old question, at what temperature will Wayne Rooney explode?
Yeah. Sort of John Motson in his sheepskin jacket will spontaneously combust during the opening ceremony, but...
See, I don't know very much about it, but it seems to me that FIFA's a bit like the Murdoch Empire, but, you know, without the cuddly father figure at the top. Is it like that? Is it?
Yeah, Sepp Blatter does things like he disrupts minute silences for Nelson Mandela 11 seconds in just because he's Sepp Blatter and he can do what he wants. And he's not a great guy. I wouldn't want to go for a drink with Sepp Blatter.
So what are they going to do? Are they going to rerun?
They're just carrying on with it. It's just sort of, yeah, it doesn't matter. It's all right. It's 50 degrees. Everyone will die. The ball will melt and you'll just have to kick a puddle about. It don't matter.
I think it's quite important that it still goes to Qatar, just to give everyone a better sense of perspective about football. Just when everyone's sweating there and no one wants to go there because it's a horrible country and the whole event is pointless, then I think the world will have learnt something.
But isn't there some talk now about running the Summer Cup but in the winter?
Well, I think they only want to do that so that some of the players won't die.
Oh. Yeah. The Winter Olympics are going to be in Saudi Arabia, but it's all above board. No money changed hands.
I have to say, I think in some ways a Winter World Cup is very similar to the Summer one, because I shan't watch either of them, so it's... I do hope they rerun the bid. It was such essential viewing the first time.
Qatar built the Shard, didn't they? It's not a deserty place at all. They built that Shard. Qatari, they've got loads of money, Qatar.
You're saying they've got loads of money as if people's presumption was that they didn't have loads of money.
Yeah, like it's news.
Well, no, but people think, oh, it's just a sort of desert kingdom near
with loads of money.
Well, but I mean, it's very built up. I mean, they've probably air-conditioned the whole outside there.
Oh, it is that my brother lives in Qatar, and I've been out several times. It is the weirdest place because they have these fabulous beaches with all these gorgeous, lovely loungers and great umbrellas and all that kind of thing. There's nobody on them because the sand would burn your feet off in an instant. So it's just what they've done, they built all these skyscrapers and they built them on sand and they're just very slowly sinking to one side. Then they knock them down and build another one. It's the weirdest. It is the
really?
And they have,
that's really happening.
Yeah, yeah. And then they've got roads in the town that you can go as fast as you like, but the road suddenly finishes because it just goes into the desert because there's nowhere to go. So that's one of the issues, that they're going to build stadiums in cities that don't exist. Wait a minute, we could build a garden city. Senior MPs have called on FIFA to strip the 2022 World Cup from Qatar following accusations that a Qatari firm controlled by a former Qatari football official, Mohammed bin Hammam, paid $2 million to FIFA's former vice president, Jack Warner, and his family. Didn't Jack Warner play Dixon of Dock Green?
Yeah.
And it's the same one.
Nothing worse than a bent copper.
No.
That is still the law in Qatar.
Experts deny corruption was responsible for awarding the World Cup to the country, saying it was only their third choice, the first two being a BP oil rig and the Democratic Republic of Narnia. Still, never mind. In the meantime, at least we can all look forward to the controversy-free 2018 World Cup held in Russia. 2 points to Ellis. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and David have got 4 points, but so too have Ellis and Mark. David, listen to this. The phone rings in the middle of the night. My body yells, what you gonna do with your life? Oh, daddy, do you know you're still number one? But girls, they wanna have fun. Oh, girls just wanna have fun. David, whose kindness is being stressed?
Well, this is the report that's just come out that says that when women get stressed, they become nicer. Whereas men under stress, I mean, it's logical, they become less pleasant and more self-obsessed. Women thrive on it. They thrive on stress and become more sociable, more empathic.
But the bit I didn't understand about this, the researchers created conditions of moderate stress. No, for a woman, I don't know how you create... you just lose one of the children. I don't know what... I don't know what it meant, really. What kind of... What makes you stressed, Ellis? Are there things that make you stressed?
See fucks.
I mean, of all the things you were going to say in the world, CFAX so not in my head.
It's been a while. I should get over it, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Why did that make you so stressed?
Well, just because if you wanted a page.
Yeah.
And then the hold button didn't work when you wanted it to. You had to wait for the whole thing to go round.
Right.
It took did you? An hour, couldn't it?
Yeah, it could take ages. Yeah.
Did you live in a very remote part of Wales growing up?
So, yeah, CFAX bothered me.
Yeah.
You'd be waiting a long time for a page to come up now.
Yeah. What about you, Mark? Do you get stressed?
Oh, about there's 20 or 30 billion things that make me stressed. Rudeness. I don't like that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm generally speaking, I am, for example, against capital punishment. But... when you're driving and you pull over and somebody comes past as a result of your kindness and they don't wave...
Yeah. Oh. And people, when there's a big queue, and then they say for a till or something, and then they haven't already got the money or at the very least their cash card ready. Are you insane, is what I'm thinking to myself. And they react as if... having to pay for whatever they want to buy is a complete surprise.
Oh, come on, there's 10 of us here.
This isn't stress.
No.
This is just rage.
Yeah.
I don't think the report said that rage made women nicer.
No.
But women treat things differently. I think women use social ways to alleviate stress. You know, they talk about their problems. They use vodka. I think there are social things that you can do.
Rather than just bottling it up and getting angrier and angrier and angrier and then throwing something.
Yeah, I think you'd let it out. I think it's better for you. A new study has surprised researchers by finding that most women, unlike men, react to stress by becoming more empathic and social. The majority of men react to stress by becoming more self-centred. Subjects were asked to perform three tasks testing empathy while placed under conditions of moderate stress. Stress made men perform worse in each task, while stress made the women organise an impromptu cocktail party and talk about their feelings. Stressed men are said to struggle locating the boundary between their emotions and the emotions of others, presumably because that would involve asking for directions.
trouble telling the boundary between their emotions and the emotions of others? I know exactly where my emotions end and other people's begin, because it's where I stop caring about them.
Can I just suggest, David, that you don't need to get cross with me about it?
It's very stressful learning this.
2 points to David. Ellis, which inspectors need to go back to school?
Oh, this is a report. A think tank's worked out that Ofsted inspectors aren't good enough or qualified to actually pass judgment on schools. I've known this for years.
Have you?
Yeah, well, when we had a school inspection when I was in the sixth form, we walked on the left, tucked our shirts in, temporary ban on British Bulldogs, and we passed with flying colours. So that is it. And I've always thought it's a bit silly that the teachers are told when the inspections... They should just spring.
Surprise.
Yeah, the you know, the power of surprise. They should just turn up or get kids to do it. Because you know that, you know, a bloke in cords with a moustache and a clipboard is an Ofsted inspector, but... Just some kid like a mole just turns up and is like...
Or you could disguise an adult as a child.
Well, like the crankies turning up to...
We had a wedgie amnesty in our school when there was an inspection. The teachers talked to us like a sort of a parent does to, you know, a harassed parent to a toddler, and they said, listen, just don't wedgie yourselves, please, for 5 days and we can keep our jobs and then you can do whatever you want on birthdays. We just don't care anymore.
Were you a wedger or a wedgie?
Oh, I was a wedgie.
Oh.
Yeah. I was state educated and never felt robbed by this until I did stand-up in a private school last week. And I turned up an hour before the set started and I spent 55 minutes on the phone to my mum going, why can you scrape together the money? It's absolutely amazing here. There are more pianos in the music room than there are in all of Swansea. It's incredible. And there was a worry box. So all of the kids, if they were worried about something, they could just write it down and then hopefully the teacher would sort it out. And I looked in the worry box and there was only one worry and it was written on the back of a credit card receipt.
I went to the... in Croydon, there's a posh public school there where they play professional cricket matches there, and I went to see Kent versus Surrey. And my lad had been there before. He'd said he'd played football against him or something. And he said, oh, they've got a zoo here, Dad. And I said, yeah, you're not going to catch me with that. He said, no, they've got a zoo. I said, oh, so about an hour this went on. They've got a zoo over there. I said, they haven't got a zoo. So I went over with him and they had a zoo! In the school! A school with a zoo! Wallabies!
Those animals.
Special albino wallabies, because you can't possibly learn about the finer points of history and mathematics in the presence and the proximity of a normal common wallaby.
The fact is, Mark, the upper classes are very inbred and what looked to you to be zoo animals. That was no gibbon, that was a viscount. Report on Ofsted, was it conducted by Ofsted?
Well, it was. These are inspectors who inspected the inspectors.
It was a think tank, and you can't go and work for a think tank if you're just anyone. Oh, no, you can, yes.
Schools watchdog Ofsted has been severely criticised over the quality of its inspectors in a report by Policy Exchange, a think tank founded by Michael Gove, the Education Secretary. Ofsted head Sir Michael Wilshaw said that he was spitting blood over the criticism, a mediocre metaphor which cost him an extra 5 marks in the English language section of the report. 2 points to Ellis. Mark, what's been sending ripples through the scientific community?
Ah, well, on the news this week, there have been various very excitable scientists, indeed, because there is some sort of ripple in space that the scientists believe can be dated back to the Big Bang that they believe was the origins of the universe, thereby proving Einstein's theory of relativity in a way that I don't quite understand. Because I thought it had already been proved in various ways anyway. But
and you went to school without a zoo.
Yeah. If only I'd had a flamingo near me, that relativity thing would just be roll off me. So I don't quite follow any of this.
I tried to read up on this.
Yeah.
And the trouble with physics and stuff is I think they make it all up. Because I was reading this. Because, you know, like chemistry and biology, you think, yeah, that's OK, we can make sense of that. You know, locusts, you cut them up, yeah, they die. You know, chemicals, yeah, OK, they make stuff. But with physics, it's all a bit you know, I was reading this thing and it said, okay, originally the universe was the size of an atom. Then there was this thing called inflation and it got a bit bigger and then suddenly there's a big bang and then it's the universe. And I thought, I actually think it's more likely that God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. When you read up on the science, it's not very convincing.
I wouldn't believe that just because for an easy life.
It makes much more sense when you think about it.
And also, this is going to sound really bad, but I read this story and I just found it so boring.
No,
the Big Bang was ages ago.
No, science isn't boring, Alice. Science is really big.
That's what people like, isn't it? Is that scientists who go, the marvellous thing about stars is they're really far away.
Everybody involved was very excited. There's a man called Dr. Chris Lintott. He's an astrophysicist at the University of Oxford. He said, I doubt many cosmologists will get much sleep tonight. I think possibly overestimating there how sexually attractive this has made cosmologists.
Some of it makes sense, doesn't it? Because they can tell that the stars are getting further apart and so on, and that means the universe is getting bigger.
It's called inflation. So things were infinitesimally small, and they're getting unimaginably big, and without inflation there would be no bouncy castles. I've run out of information.
I read an article on it. Initially there was like a speck, except a speck would be massive compared to this speck. It's like nothing at all, except that there's nothing else, so there's nothing to compare it with. It was the most massive thing there'd ever been in the nothingness, this tiny speck. And then suddenly, instantly, it was almost as big as a football. And that was the Big Bang.
Right. So
it was actually not that big initially, but, you know, unprecedentedly massive.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how big, nearly as big of a football must have seemed to the nobody who then existed, when all you've ever known, except there was no one to know it, was a speck that was smaller even than the tiniest speck you can imagine. And then it keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and then, you know, eventually the news quiz.
You know what, I think maybe it's time we just moved on from this. You know, because does it really matter? Should we just draw a line under this whole thing, you know, how the Big Bang versus the Lord creating the world in 6 days? Should we just agree to disagree and move on? Because at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter, does it?
Well, it matters to some people. There was a physicist called Professor Max Tegmark. He said, it's a bad day for multiverse sceptics. In fairness, if you define yourself, I think, as a multiverse sceptic, most days are probably pretty tough.
Liked it at the time when they thought it was everything was like snooker, you know, Newton's times. Everything's made basically out of billiard balls of various sizes, and they hit each other at various angles and go into the pockets. And that sort of made sense. And then the physicists made the mistake of continuing to research.
Yeah,
that was the point at which they should have stopped. Yeah. Okay, it's all like snooker. Lovely, we've done physics.
Yeah,
but no, they've carried on. They're looking into it. Now they don't know if light is a wave or a particle, or if everything might be made of string. I mean, seriously. No. Everything, there's a theory, string theory, everything's string. Everything can't be string. Stick with billiards. Everything can be billiards.
Billiards or snooker?
Snooker or billiards. I mean, I would say...
Pool
that.
Or pool?
I think...
No. Or noodles.
No.
I'm sorry, that's madness.
In terms of advanced physics, any of those tabletop potting games... No. But not like table football, though. Who are the footballers? That makes no sense.
Who was the person who joined up the dots to make the constellation? Because I look up there and I think...
Brilliant programme on BBC Two to try and capture the modern fascination with science. The sky, what's that then? Blue, they say it's blue. Clouds, how do they work? Rain don't come from them, can't do. What about the wind? I don't know. See you next week.
A group of astronomers has found the first evidence of gravitational ripples sent out in the first seconds of the Big Bang. Astrophysicist Dr. Chris Lintott said this discovery was like all our Christmases at once. And then Dr. Chris Lintott's children nodded sadly.
They'll probably turn out all Christmases have happened at once, according to physics.
Yeah, so they were all made of string.
Yeah.
Do you ever find yourself thinking... Well, I suppose if Santa went really fast and was really up and down those chimneys pretty quick, but then what about flats?
Go on, Isaac Newton.
We have to get on! scientists have now measured light energy released what they call slightly after the Big Bang, around 380,000 years later. Slightly after. They seem to have the same grasp of time as Amazon couriers.
You could really see back to the very beginning of time. You'd see a flashing light saying, "Welcome to Eastbourne."
At the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and David have got 8 points, but so too have Ellis and Mark. Before we move on to round three, we come to an exciting first for the news quiz as we present our own contribution to sport relief. OK, can I just say I was disconcerted about this when a memo was circulated bearing my name and the words office bike.
It was a D, Sandra, it was a D.
Oh, sorry. You're absolutely right, it was the office bike. Here in the theatre we've got five exercise bikes, which are normally used during just a minute to power Nicholas Parsons. We are going to conclude the show pedalling in order to contribute to the target of having BBC radio presenters run, swim and cycle for 25,000 miles, which is the circumference of the world.
How many of the world's problems are going to be solved by putting a 53-year-old man with asthma on a bicycle in front of a studio audience? Why can't you just give some money without humiliating people?
Well, humiliation is what we want, so let's all mount up. Not words I've ever said to a room full of boys before. So if you boys could get on your bicycles, please. Jeremy, you must be perfect for cycling with all the drugs you're on. Voltarol, Cocodamol, Witch Hazel. So now, here's the thing, that I was going to bicycle, but I'm sort of slightly worried because I'm supposed to be running the show. So I was wondering if Kathy would you mind doing the bicycling?
Oh, well, I'd like to, but obviously I've got to read the news. Yeah. And, well, I have to keep an eye on you.
Oh, yeah, they did say that after that last incident. So,
haven't Radio 4 organised something?
No, not as far as I know, no.
That's
why?
Really fair. Well, Radio 1 got Victoria Pendleton, I think, this week. Was
oh,
on the
that
bike
would have been fantastic, yeah.
Bradley Wiggins is on the Archers.
Oh, right, but so we need an Olympian.
It's going to be Beyonce. It's going to be Beyonce.
There might be someone here, you never know.
Well, just like if I said if there's a doctor in the house, like
that. That kind of thing. See, it was a Radio 4 audience. This illustrious group. You never know who's there.
All right. Is there an Olympian in the house?
Sandy, yes. Hello.
Ladies and gentlemen, Duncan Goodhue. Have a seat on the bike. So I need you to I need you to do the pedalling for me, Duncan.
Sandy, I usually lie down when I exercise.
Okay, well, we could do that later, but for the moment... That probably would make money. do join in with the questions if you'd like to, but mostly I need you to try and raise the money so that we get the miles done here, OK? Of course, Duncan isn't a cyclist. Mind you, Cathy doesn't really read the news. We found her in the car park. But there's 10 points to the winner, OK, to the team that gets the most miles or the most distance during the time. So we can start pedalling as we start round two with a cutting from the 6 o'clock news.
The owner of the new HS2 high-speed rail line is calling on it to reach Crewe by 2027.
And our thanks to Leon Coleman for sending us that. Jeremy, which law is no longer a grey area?
Apparently, until recently, it was the law that if you saw a grey squirrel, you had to report it to a constable. And then we found out that many, many police officers had gone undercover and disguised themselves as squirrels. And were working among the squirrel community, acting as agent provocateurs, getting the squirrels to give their disease to the red squirrels so they could be arrested.
I think Jeremy's short of oxygen.
I don't think it's very fair that these bikes are so silent. Oh, I don't think anyone listening to the programme will get the sense of the industry.
And they're certainly not going very far.
How are you doing,
Duncan? I should explain to the listener, we're actually doing PE on the apparatus.
Are you all right there, Duncan?
We're clocking up some
clocking
miles
up some
here.
Miles, you guys, this case behind...
Just like everybody else for sport relief at the moment.
Absolutely. So, this is absolutely true. Could we not start a war between grey squirrels and badgers? Is not the way to solve the problem with the two animals there.
Squirrels would just lure them in and then give them their disease.
You could be your... Oh, Jesus.
Pace yourself, son. Pace yourself.
He's cheating.
I do want to win.
He's cycling deliberately quickly.
I'm trying to find a middle ground between winning the points for my team and still having enough oxygen in my body to be hilarious. 10 years on the comedy circuit hasn't really prepared me for this.
Duncan, do you think that you would have won a medal at the Olympics if, just as you were turning for the last lap on the breaststroke, someone had said, "Now, Duncan, what law do you think changed this week?"
In the mid-30s,
yeah,
you could be fined £5,
yes,
for not reporting sight
of a squirrel.
Of a grey squirrel, which,
yes,
obviously, A, is hard to police.
Well, and there are lots of, actually, little-known laws like this. There's,
Also...
yes?
Will that be a ding noise when everything's fine in Africa?
I am really struggling with this. I can't tell if Ellis is trying to speak to me or needs help.
But because they've only just repealed the law...
Yes.
Like, I watched an entire series of Animals of Farthing Wood as a child, which means I owe the government about £100 million. That wasn't funny when I was out of breath, was it?
The government is scrapping the laws requiring people to report the presence of grey squirrels in their garden. Up until now, the Grey Squirrels Prohibition Order of 1937 made it illegal for anyone to fail to report a grey squirrel in their garden and for the squirrels to buy or sell alcohol. I haven't read the whole act. The way to tell the difference between the squirrels is that the grey squirrels are Canadian, smaller and friendlier, while the red squirrels believe that the workers of the world have nothing to lose but their chains. 2 points to Jeremy. David, who hasn't been forking out for anything that isn't French?
Oh, some guy.
Yes.
Yes, some
so,
guy.
So 2 points
some
to David. Let's just... Yeah. Crack through this, shall we?
No, he's, I don't know his name, but he's...
His name is Benjamin Carle.
Yes, for some television programme in France, he responded to a French politician who said, "We should all try and buy French. That's the French, not us. We shouldn't." So he tried to just buy French things for a year, but it turns out they don't make a lot of things in France. He was fine for, you know, baguettes, but...
tasteless apples, they make...
Tasteless apples, but he couldn't have, for example, a fridge, because nowhere in France makes fridges. They import them all. He wanted some David Bowie music, but apparently there isn't a French one of him. So he just had a sort of bare flat with a chair and a baguette and some French wine. And he was making a point about, you know, where things are sourced, and we should really think about that. I'm really thinking about that while cycling a bloody bike.
I think we should applaud him. It takes a lot of gall. I'm fine. I'm not bicycling. He was pictured in the Daily Telegraph posing with a T-shirt which read, "Made in France." Now, I'm no linguist. You all right, boys?
Yeah.
Yeah. Benjamin Carle, a Frenchman, has spent the last 10 months trying to live solely on French things, such as cheese, Gauloise and structuralism. He was unable to find a cheap French car whose parts had not been assembled abroad, so he had no choice but to attach 2 wheels and some pedals to a string of onions. He was declared 96.9% made in France, just like the profits from our utility bills. Ellis...
I reckon that in Somalia, the kids will go, "Oh, blimey, we didn't mean to go to that much trouble."
I might actually choose the sweatiest as the winner at the minute. How much have you done on there, Duncan? Does it say?
2.3 miles.
2.3 miles.
More than me.
Very good, Ellis. Why might the heart beat to an Al Gore rhythm?
Because mathematicians at Harvard, with nothing better to do, have found out that couples who agree on stuff are more likely to stay together.
I've never heard anybody more disinterested. An answer on the show.
Yeah, so, yeah, well done, Harvard.
Yeah.
And they found 3 questions, and if you answer the same to these 3 questions, that's it. Book the registry office. You're going to be married for life. And the 3 questions are, do you like horror films? Have you ever travelled around a country alone? And wouldn't it be fun just to jack it all in and go and live on a sailboat? So it's like a sort of elaborate PR exercise by Tony Bullimore to find a new partner. I thought more people would get that reference from 20 years ago. But silly me. He was the man who was trapped under his hull for 4 days in 1996. All right, fine.
No, there's nothing we like more on the show than a very old news story. That is... to tell you, Alice, I'm much older than you. As you get older and you're dating, the only question you need to ask is, do you have a toilet on the ground floor? A group of Harvard mathematicians have revealed three simple questions they say can determine whether a relationship has the potential to last. This news has shaken our very understanding of love to its core, as it was previously understood that the key to a long relationship was low standards. The mathematicians also gave some advice on what type of photos are most successful online. The best pose for men is to look sexy and mysterious, as typified presumably by a man in Speedos and a balaclava. This picture for women is apparently a photograph taken from above them, or as I like to call it, a photograph. 2 points to Ellis. Mark, who's giving a guide to feeling better about themselves?
Oh, I don't know, the Queen.
You look awfully hot.
I'm used to cycling and I'm suffering here.
You are?
Usually, yeah, I think it's because usually when you cycle across London,
yeah,
you expect every now and again someone who's nowhere near you, who's angry in a car, to wind the window down and go, "Peace off!" If you weren't there, I could have gone through there. And I always think, well, yes, but that is how the world works, isn't it? We're all in each other's way, aren't we? You might as well go and knock on a random house and go, "If you weren't living here and this house weren't here, I could have driven through there, but no, you selfish pig!" Is that the answer, Sandy?
Well, considering it was about the girl guides, not entirely.
The girl guides have got a badge for self-esteem.
They have.
If you don't get that badge, it's going to absolutely destroy you, isn't it?
Do you know any more about what they have to do for this badge, what the sort of things
they have to not worry about their BMI index or wear makeup.
Yeah, they've got to not worry about how thin they are.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about how thin I am at the moment. I'd like to stop getting thinner. Yeah, I know, I don't want to. I don't like it. I want to get fatter again.
It's a body confidence badge.
Yes, darling.
But when you're in the Brownies,
yeah,
you're in primary school.
Yeah.
And when I was in primary school, body confidence meant being able to do that fart noise in your armpit. I don't know if you remember that.
Can you do it while cycling? Yeah.
Please don't. Girl Guiding UK will offer a new badge in body confidence to challenge myths about how women should look and prevent unhealthy eating habits. The new campaign highlighted the dangers of being too thin by rubbing two guides together to make a fire. In recent years, Girl Guiding has got rid of traditional badges such as homemaking, cow milking, and taking driving points for your husband. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings that the teams have brought along. Mr. Hardy.
While cycling.
Sandy, this was sent in by Matt Brazier, and it's from the BBC News website. Frozen sperm fight ends in victory. You see, you've got a picture of frozen sperm fighting, and it's hilarious.
Can I say, honestly, one of the weirdest nights of my life... Mr. Mitchell.
Do you know what? Why can't they move to places where it's easier to grow stuff? Kent says there's going to be a whole garden city in Ebbsfleet.
Well, that'll certainly get the donations flowing. Mr. Mitchell.
This is sent in by Jane Liddy, and it's apparently from the front page of the Barnsley Chronicle. And it says, a businesswoman who received a positive response to her appeal for a dwarf kissogram was quoted as saying, "Sometimes the person you're looking for is just under your nose."
Mr. James.
This is from Jenny Tejet Meyer. It's from the Scarborough News, a report of a council meeting relating to urgent need to reinforce cliffs and coastline around the spa. Once the seawall was breached either by landslip or damaged by the sea, the cost of the area could be £114 million. The figure includes estimates for things such as loss of tourists.
Mr. Steele.
This is from Patrick Howell, who says, I attach a cutting from today's Stroud Life. It concerns a family who have designed a tea towel that celebrates all things good about living in Stroud. A member of the family said, Stroud is such a wonderful place to live and there are so many good things going on here, we couldn't believe there wasn't already a tea towel celebrating them all.
Boys, stop now. Stop. Let have to check the mileage of Cathy. Can you do the maths? Jeremy, how far have you gone?
I've gone 4.7 miles.
David?
4.6.
Yeah! Ellis?
6.5.
Mark?
5.
Okay. Duncan.
Well, I think I'm going to stay in the pool and do my sport relief swim. I've only done 5.4.
No, nevertheless, fantastic. Okay, whilst still doing the news quiz, we have managed to clock up 25.13 miles for sport relief. But way ahead of the game, I have to say, the winners on the bikes are Ellis and Mark, who get the extra 10 points. This is a final score we have never had on the news quiz. Jeremy and David have got 14 points, but this week's winners are Ellis and Mark with 20.
I'm covered in sweat. If I go home on the underground now, people will sort of give me 50 pence.
I'm just hoping for a bit more sweat so it'll look like all of my shirt is supposed to be that colour.
Can I just say a very, very big thank you to the lovely Duncan Goodhue. Before we leave you, here is a headline from an interview in the Daily Mail sent by Tom Batten.
Why Women Don't Need Fidelity at My Age by Trollope 70.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz with Jeremy Hardy, David Mitchell, Ellis James and Mark Steele, with a special appearance by Duncan Goodhue. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Cathy Clugston. The chair's script was written by Simon Littlefield, Jack Bernard and John Luke Roberts, with additional material by James Fritz, James Bubb and Gráinne Maguire. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.